Welcome to Recovery Hour, show two. I never quite know how to introduce this show, so let's just start.
Glastonbury Festival, I'm with Ananta Nitai from the Hare Krishna movement. Ananta, how are you enjoying the festival?
Very amazing weather, very hot, very very special weather actually. Usually it's a mud bath, as everybody knows. And what happens, we have a tent, we have a Hare Krishna tent, and we've been it's been established for at least on and off at least 7 or 8 years, probably longer than that actually, and people take shelter in the tent when it's muddy and it's cold. People take shelter in the tent, and this time because they're taking shelter because it's hot. It's too hot, you know, really hot, yeah. So it's quite, the irony is quite interesting. So we have a spiritual, some sloka is a term. It's like a statement from God, if you like. Bhagavad Gita means song of God. It contains little pieces of prose, if you like, but they're words spoken by God. And this one particular sloka, it says, happiness and distress come and go like the winter and summer seasons. One must learn to tolerate them without being disturbed. And that's interesting. So we're thinking, tolerate happiness. That's a strange thing to say. Tolerate sadness, you know, distress, I can understand that, but tolerate happiness. So the way, one way to appreciate that is like, when happiness, it goes. So what happens when the happiness goes? We may, you know, lose a person that we, you know, we may have lost contact with a person we care about, we're in love with, or whatever. So that happiness which the person represented, that goes. So what we're doing, we're lamenting. So, you know, it's interesting, isn't it? And so the interesting thing is that in this material world, we're experiencing happiness and distress, and it's like they're all flickering experiences. They're flickering. And it's a bit like a light. One thing that used to really annoy me was strobe lights. They weren't exactly, the room wasn't in the dark, and it wasn't actually in the light because it was flickering on and off, right? So you can't say it was light, and you can't say it was in between. You couldn't savour the light. You get my point? So, and you couldn't really relish the, well, not that you would relish the darkness, like you couldn't say it was dark, but you couldn't say it was light either. It was in between. And this is what the material world's like. When we strive for happiness, which is the light, if you like, it's just flickering here and there. It's not constant. Because the nature of the soul is to be blissful forever. That's why we don't want to enjoy, you know, we don't want enjoyment to go, because we are by nature happy. But in the material world, we're covered by this overwhelming material energy, and we're stuck in this body. Okay, we could go heavy here, but you know, we're stuck in this body. And what is the body made of? Mucus, pus, blood, stool, and urine. But it's presented to us as an attractive object, isn't it? But when we analyse it, so for example, you know, you can look at someone's foot. And you go, oh, I really love your foot. Or I really love your kidneys. Or I really, you know, I really love your intestines. You know, do you know what I mean? But those are parts of the body. So you get me? So there's a duality here. There's a duality. There's some conditions we accept, some we reject. So if I took a beautiful woman or a handsome man, and I took a photograph of them, and you say, look, here's a photograph of a most beautiful human being, but I actually took a photograph of their nostril, the inside of their nostril. That sounds really, but it's true. You go, are you crazy? But I've taken a photograph of that person, but a particular part of their body would not be attractive. Or say the ears, or what, you know, the armpits, whatever you want to say, you know. And my point is, so it's this duality where you have contrasts, which actually aren't particularly comfortable. So in the spiritual world, things are there. Everything we experience in this material world, this is the Krishna conscious philosophy, is a perverted reflection of what is going on in the spiritual world. But in the spiritual world, everything's centered around God or Krishna, and it's all in harmony. And things happen, but it's all for the pleasure of God. And the interesting thing is that we're trying to have pleasure in the material world, and we're not really doing it, some are a bit successful, but you can't be totally successful, because the vehicle in which we're trying to be happy in is the body, and that body's temporary.
Can you tell me a bit about your journey to Krishna?
Yeah, that's a good point. Well, yeah, I will actually. This links in, so earlier on you said thank you for taking your time out to talk to me, right? And then here in the material world, people have no time because they're in a rush. So and my job, I'm going to get back to it in a moment about how I came to the Krishna consciousness, because it's all linked up. So someone gave me a book in the street, and fortunately enough I took it, and then about 5 years later I read it. Now, when I tried to distribute these spiritual books, Bhagavad Gita, Bhagavatam, amazing books that Srila Prabhupada has translated, some people say, oh, I haven't got time. I can't stop. I haven't got time. So one day this guy said, I'm in a rush. And I says, well, are you in a rush to die? And he stopped. I said, what do you mean? In a rush to die? Well, you're in a rush today. You'll be in a rush tomorrow. And you'll be in a rush the day after. So ultimately, you're in a rush to die. So this is what Krishna consciousness does. It teaches you to use your intelligence, because everyone's intelligent. You know, everyone is, but they get stuck in particular situations, you know, according to their karma. Now, for me, my journey began where you know, someone committed suicide or tried to commit suicide. I thought, why did they try to commit suicide? what was that all about? And I started, you know, thinking, why would someone try to commit suicide? Because I was young at the time. Why would someone do that? You know, it's a very, you know, attractive person. Why would they do that? You know. And then I started writing, because I was a musician, started writing music and things like that. I wrote about them. And then I began working in a drug rehabilitation, and I started writing about things that would happen there. And then I realised all the songs were linked. They were all linked. I thought, oh, something's going on, you know, what's going on, you know. And basically, it's just when you see lots of people suffering and you're thinking, why are people suffering? What ultimately, why am I suffering? You know, what is going on, you know? And then I was in my room, and I had all these machines, because I used to like, well, I still like writing music. I was thinking, okay, I could spend the rest of my life in this room writing music, you know, but is there anything more than that? And then I just picked up the Bhagavad Gita, which someone had given me 5 years previous, and I just read it all the way through. And the interesting thing, when I first picked it up, I couldn't read it because I was drinking. I wasn't a heavy drinker or anything like that. I was smoking and, you know, doing things that people do, sort of thing, you know, and eating meat and things like that. And then when I read the Bhagavad Gita all the way through 5 years later, I wasn't drinking and I wasn't eating meat. I was smoking, but anyway. So two of those, you know, these activities, well, they're not good for you, these particular activities, intoxication, illicit sex, meat eating and gambling. These four activities which are actually, don't make you happy. They don't make you happy. Initially, you'll get some pleasure from it, but ultimately, in the long run, they will not make you happy. And believe it or not, so I went to my first temple and they said, you'll find it very difficult to understand spiritual knowledge if you eat meat. So this is a reference to ahimsa, non-violence, not to inflict violence onto anyone else, animals especially. Because we're eating, you know, their flesh for the whims of our tongue, where we don't need to. We can quite easily get by on vegetarian food. And we offer our vegetarian food to God, to Krishna. It means sanctified. Because, you know, we didn't create the sunlight, we didn't create the rain, we didn't create the soil. So this all comes from God. So at least as in acknowledgement, then we should, you know, offer you food. You know, so this is what Krishna consciousness is. It's acknowledgement of God. Yeah. So that was the first step in your journey. Is to realise that my journey, that there was something higher. And I read this book called Chant and Be Happy. And and that was after reading the Bhagavad Gita. So I read the Bhagavad Gita and I understood some of it. There was something there. But then later on I came to the temple and then I started reading the smaller books and other people's experiences, say George Harrison from the Beatles. And his experiences were very, very special, very special soul, George Harrison. And he did so much for the Hare Krishna movement, for people in general. I mean, so many people have been influenced by his music. And that's something that touches me because being a musician, like what you write about, if you haven't got any spiritual inclination, you just write about relationships and this, that and the other and whatever, you know, the usual stuff. But if you have some spiritual input, then you can actually spiritualise your music and then have some effect, even if it's on one person. Because the thing is, in the material world, we're motivated by, you know, either, you know, sex life or money or whatever. But where does that get you? What is the result of our activities? And this is what Krishna consciousness actually teaches us to do. Sit back and analyse what you're doing. And it's not saying join us. It's just saying, let's have a look at your life and say, okay, where are we going? And the interesting thing about it is it defines, it's a science and it's a philosophy. For example, religion. What is the function of religion? I would never ask anyone that before a job. What a weird question. but it's quite simple and straightforward. The function of religion is to bring you closer to God. So it doesn't matter what religion you follow. If it is bringing you closer to God, if it is, fine, stick with it. If it isn't, throw it away and get another one. That's the interesting thing about it. It's getting me because it's not, because it's this obsession of I and mine and designations. I'm British, I'm this, I'm that, I'm Hindu, I'm Muslim. No, we're all servants of God.
buckets of rain, buckets of tears, got all them buckets coming out of my ears, buckets of moonbeams in my hand. You got all the love, honey, baby, I can stand. Seen pretty people disappear like smoke. Friends will arrive, friends will disappear. If you want me, honey, baby, I'll be here. I like the way that you move your hips. I like the cool way you look at me. Everything about you is bringing me misery. But I know what I like. I like the way you love me strong and slow. I'm taking you with me, honey, baby, when I go. Life is a bust. All you can do is do what you must. You do what you must do, and you do it well. I do it for you, honey, baby, can't you tell?
Step Dome, which is in the healing field, and we're talking to Lizzie. Thanks for taking the time to talk to us, Lizzie. How are you enjoying the festival?
I'm having a really good time. I got here on the Wednesday. It's now Sunday, the last day, and it's been a roller coaster. I've had the most amazing highs, bigger highs than I could ever have had on drugs. And I've had some really lovely emotional lows, which I don't have to react to in any of my old druggy ways. I can just, you know, I can talk about it in the 12-step dome, which is behind me at the moment. And I was at a meeting earlier at 12 o'clock. I didn't even know I was going to be at that meeting, but it's been really amazing. I've been clean and sober for nearly 6 months now, and it's such a great feeling to be on this new path of life and to have my higher power with me nearly every day. And having a 12-step dome at a festival makes it easy for me to reconnect with like-minded people who are also, you know, human and and reacting to all these different stimuli, not only the wonderful things that are going on, but the hardships, you know, being chucked out of your tent first thing in the morning because of the blazing sun, and then having to last the day and see all your favourite bands marching around a festival that must be over, I don't know, miles, few square miles at least, so loads to see. I'm 29 now, nearly 30, 30 in November. So I'm really happy to be finally on my path to recovery. I struggled for many years with my use of marijuana, but I would take anything really that I could get my hands on. I wasn't a massive get off your head kind of person, but my inner life was really, really struggling, you know. I experienced a lot of madness and chaos, and I've got a big journey in life, I think we all have, full of greatness, and you know, it's about time we all sort of embraced our own greatness instead of anethnotizing, if that's even the way to say it, ourselves against it. Life's too short and I'm too big, so it's got to be done. I can't remember a time when I was more in love with life than I am in my recovery. I think the fact that I'm working so closely with other recovering addicts and my higher power, and you know, it just seems like everything's slotting into place now for me, and my life's really taking off. I'm getting opportunities, and it's true what they say, you do start to live a life beyond your wildest dreams, you know. And I used to intellectualise all the great things that life could be because of the magic. God, we can see the helicopters filming me now. It's not me it's filming, but, you know, I like to be a bit self-obsessed, even if I am a recovering addict. I'm just joking. But, yeah, no, it's amazing to be here, and Stevie Wonder's going to be here tonight. And he's got the biggest amount of love you've ever felt in your life, so why would I want to be smashed off my face for that? So I owe my continued recovery at this festival to the 12-step dome, and I owe my life... Well, I don't owe anything to anyone, but I'm just totally grateful for fellowship, totally grateful for my life, and I'm grateful for my health and my well-being, and... You know, I'm on a journey now that I'm really grateful to be on, instead of just being lost. But that's really all I've got to say, and I hope to see you in the 12-step dome at some other festival. Peace.
When you cling, life gets destroyed. When you hold on to anything, you cease to live. It's all over the gospel pages. And one attains this, my dears, by understanding. Understand. Understand another illusion, that happiness is not the same as excitement. It's not the same as thrills. That's another illusion. A thrill comes from the fulfillment of a desire, of a craving. It breeds anxiety, and sooner or later it brings its hangover. When you have suffered sufficiently from this, then you're ready to see it. You're feeding yourself on thrills. This is like feeding a racehorse with delicacies. You're giving it cake and wine. You don't feed a racehorse on that. This is like feeding a human being on drugs. You don't fill your stomach on drugs. You need good, solid, nutritious food and drink. Now you need to understand this for yourself, and there is another illusion that someone else can do this for you. That some savior or guru or teacher can do this for you. Not the greatest guru in the world can take one step for you. You've got to take it yourself. Saint Augustine says so marvelously, Jesus Christ himself could do nothing for many of his hearers. Or as I said to you the other day, that lovely Arab saying, the nature of the rain is the same, and yet it produces thorns in the marsh and flowers in the garden. It is you who have to do it. No one else can help you. It is you who have to digest your food. It is you who have to understand. No one else can understand for you. It is you who has to see. Nobody can see for you. And if what you seek is truth, then you must do this. You can lean on no one. Or another illusion, the illusion that it is important to be respectable. It is important to be loved and to be appreciated. It is important to be important, that we have a natural urge to be loved and to be appreciated and to belong. That's false. Drop your illusion and you will find happiness. We have the natural urge is to be free. The natural urge is to love, as I shall explain later. But not to be loved. You know, sometimes I get a client in some of my psychotherapy sessions, and one very common problem is, nobody loves me. How could I be happy? And I explain to him or her, you mean you never have any moment where you forget the fact that you're not loved and you let go and you're happy? Of course she has. She goes to a movie and she's all absorbed in the movie, and it's a comedy and she's roaring with laughter. And in that blessed moment, she's forgotten to remind herself, nobody loves me, nobody loves me, nobody loves me, nobody loves me, and she's happy. Then she comes out of that theater with her friend, and her friend goes off with her boyfriend, her own boyfriend, and this girl's all alone, and she thinks, all my friends have their boyfriends. I've got no one. I'm so unhappy. Nobody loves me. This is like in India. Lots of our poorer people are beginning to acquire transistors, which is quite a luxury. Everybody got a transistor. I don't have a transistor. I'm so unhappy. But until everybody acquired a transistor, you were perfectly happy without one. Until somebody told you that you wouldn't be happy unless you were loved, you were perfectly happy. You become happy not by being loved, my dears, which means by being desired, by being attractive to someone. That's what you mean by being loved. You become happy by contact with reality. That's what brings happiness. By a moment-to-moment contact with reality. That's where you find God. That's where you find happiness. But most people are not even ready to hear that. All right, what can one do? Another illusion, the belief that reality, external events have the power to hurt you, that other people have the power to hurt you. They don't. It is you who give it to them. Another illusion, you are all those labels that people have put onto you or that you have put onto yourself. You're not. You're not. So you don't have to cling to them. You know, the day somebody tells me I'm a genius and I take that seriously, I'm in big trouble. Can you understand why? Because I'm going to be tense now. I got to live up to it. I got to maintain it. I got to keep it. I got to find out after every lecture, did you like the lecture? Do you still think I'm a genius? See? So what you need to do is smash it. Smash it and you're free. Don't identify with those labels. That's what he thinks. That's how he experienced you at that minute. Are you a genius? Are you a nut? Are you a mystic? Are you crazy? Does it really matter? Provided you continued to be aware and you continued to live life from moment to moment. How marvelously described in those words. You want to know who the mystic is? You want to know who the awakened person is? Look at the birds of the air. Look at the lilies of the field. They do not toil. They do not spin. They do not gather up into barns. So why are you anxious? Can you, for all your anxiety, add a single moment to your life? Why bother about tomorrow? Is there a life after death? Will I survive death? Why bother about tomorrow? Get in to today. As someone said, life is something that happens to us while we're busy making other plans. That's pathetic. Live in the present moment. Now, this is one of the things that you will notice will happen to you as you're coming awake. You are living in the present. You are tasting every moment as you live it. Another fairly good sign. You're hearing the symphony, one note after the other.
All right, everybody, just sit down, wrap yourself up, we're gonna have a ride out. My guitar, hold on to your neighbor, man. Please get off those towers, we don't need any extra weight on us. Cover all the equipment. Hey, if you think really hard, maybe we can stop this rain. Yeah. No rain, no rain, no rain, no rain, no rain, no rain, no rain. No
you knocking at my cellar door. I love you, baby, can I have some more? Oh, the damage done. I hit the city and I lost my band. I wash a needle, take another man. Gone, gone, the damage done. I sing this song because I love the man. I know that some of you don't understand.
Sophie here next to me. Hello, Sophie.
Hi.
And tell us a little bit about your journey, because you used to, life's changed for you quite a bit recently, isn't it?
Yeah, sure. Well, I'm eating chocolate, so it's hard to speak at the same time, but, you know, that's one of life's luxuries that I still allow. But life's changed since I stopped drinking and I stopped getting out of my head quite a lot. And I stopped that a couple of years ago.
What was it that made you decide to stop?
It was a succession of embarrassing, terrible, shameful events, really. But it spanned over a good while of, you know, just being depressed and being out of work and just getting into situations I really shouldn't have. You know, I used to have a lot of fun, you know, having parties and all that sort of thing, but it got a little bit, well, it got out of hand. And I just reached that point that I think people have to reach to be able to stop. You have to get to that place where you're like, I cannot do this anymore. Otherwise, you can just skim along happily forever, just sort of occasionally shaming yourself and never feeling like you have a problem. But yeah, mine escalated. It wasn't about the social thing anymore. I'd be with my friends, but I would be looking at their drinks and wanting theirs as well as mine, thinking I'm, you know, a really generous, kind friend, but I was coveting everything around me because I always wanted more. Mm. And all my kind of zest and enthusiasm was just getting sapped. I didn't have that joy anymore. I'd lost the joy of it. And I just kind of had to, really, you know. And my dad got sober, like, when I was younger, and I used to see him, I used to live with him, and he was drunk and he was horrible. And I saw what cleaning, you know, your system could do. And, you know, if you stop taking a depressant, guess what? You're not going to feel depressed. But it's so socially acceptable, so it doesn't seem like it's a real threat to people, but it is, you know. It can really, really, really take people's lives away. So, yeah. I just got to a situation where I couldn't go on anymore in the way that I was. But I didn't want to stop drinking. I wanted the situations to stop. I wanted the consequences to go away and leave me alone. But they wouldn't. So, yeah, I got sober. I started going to AA and go to meetings. And I really didn't want to be there, of course, and I didn't want, you know, the name, the brand, the alcoholic. You know, that's someone that sits on a park bench and talks to himself or something, you know, but I've done that, you know. But, you know, I just wasn't a homeless person at the time. But, you know, I found that I needed to just listen and to just see what was going on there and to just give it a try. And I really enjoyed the fact that people from all walks of life were there and that they were just sharing what was going on with them and how they were coping with things, with life on life's terms. And I didn't even think that I wasn't doing that. But, you know, if you have a bottle to heal your heart when it's broken, or if you have a bottle to kind of give you the courage to go for a job, or, you know, in every which way but loose, if you're always reaching for the bottle, then you're not actually reaching for your own attributes, your own courage, your own sense of achievement, your own faith. You know, I need to learn how to do these things myself. And I hadn't even realized that I wasn't progressing, because if I've been taking drink and drugs from, let's say, 13, then all of these new things I'm learning about life and how to live it is through a prism of you know, of chemicals that don't belong to my mind, you know. So you learn things through a paranoid lens.
Clear my head.
And I found all these different natural highs, you know, just waking up knowing where I am, where I've been, what's going on, waking up looking forward to the day and having my life filled with all the things that I actually want to get done. You know, rather than having nothing to do and not wanting to get out of bed and not wanting to talk to anyone. And, you know, I still have those days sometimes, but I think we all need to hibernate sometimes.
Just having a bit more of a purpose to your life, perhaps.
Yeah, absolutely. And in not being completely self-centered. I mean, sure, I still want to do what I want to do, but, you know, thinking more about people and more about how to take part in the world. You know, I was trying to be a kind of an anarchist when I was off my head and thinking everyone that just went on their normal day to their normal jobs, they'd missed the point somehow and they were lemmings and, you know, they were just drones or something like that, you know, and it was really arrogant of me in a way because it's like, well, what are you doing? You're sitting in an empty warehouse on cement listening to thumping music and you haven't slept for 3 days. How are you solving this problem or how are you getting to any higher state other than just sitting here getting high? So I'm really enjoying exploring how my mind feels and reacts in the normal light of day and getting all that zest back for my life, getting the energy back to do things and to laugh and to play. And you know, I'll go out and dance till all hours when I want to, but the music's got to be bang on now. It has to really be good, it has to really work to move me, you know, not just wait to come up. And that's great. You know, it's great to actually want reality.
Mm. So what kind of, if you had to give a few, some words of encouragement, some hope to someone that might be not really sure in which direction their life's going, feel a little bit confused, feel as if there's no help and they don't really know which direction to go.
Mm.
I mean, just based on your experience, what would you? It's a difficult question, but what kind of?
What would I suggest?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, first of all, I'd say it's a great thing that you're questioning yourself. I think if people just blindly carry on, you know, and they know that they're doing too much, but they don't check themselves, then you know, it's harder to break out of that. But if you're worrying about the levels of which you're taking things, then try and cut down. And if you find that you can't, because once you have one, you want more and more and more, you know, such is the effect of, you know, a compulsive sort of addiction to something, then yeah, maybe you need to get help. And, you know, maybe, I mean, someone you know goes to AA, or a friend of a friend does, because there's millions of people all over the world. In every country, there's a meeting. And, but there's NA, there's CA, there's GA,
absolutely.
You know, there's so many groups that people can find. But also, you know, and if you're not ready, then you're not ready. And you carry on and you see, like, sometimes you've just really got to have that gift of desperation to get to that point that you go, I can't take this.
Mm.
And I don't mean to say that in a flippant way, like I would just go get trashed then. But I mean, if you don't feel like you're ready to ask these questions, then don't, and that's fine. But if you're taking things and then you feel terrible about it, then why are you doing it and why haven't you stopped doing it? Because it's self-destructive and it doesn't make sense, and it only makes sense to you when you're addicted to it, because you'll justify any reason to take it. Mm. I could have any reason in the world to have a drink. You know, I just need to not do it a day at a time. And in terms of the encouragement, I mean, you know, there's so much you can do in a day. And all of these sort of creative drives that we have, you know, I used to really feel like different drugs were a muse, but they ended up being a crutch, you know, and I relied on them and they stunted my creativity. And, you know, I've made more things and created more things now. And I remember what I've thought of the night before, you know, and there's just so much possibility to being awake, and there's so many parts of our mind to explore without needing to take drugs to do it. And whatever those things are that you want to do, you can do it. It's just time to kind of be present for your own life. You know?
Thank you, Sophie.
You're welcome.
I've met many people over the years, and in my opinion, I have found that people are the same everywhere. They have the same fears, shed similar tears, dying so many years. The oppressed seem to have suffered the most in every continent, coast to coast. Now our lives are in the hands of the pusher man. We break it all down in hopes that you might understand how to protect yourself. Don't make no profit for the man. I'm so glad I've got my own. So glad that I can see. My life's a natural high. The man can't put no thing on me. I'm so glad I've got my own. So glad that I can see. My life's a natural high. The man can't put no thing on me. You're something kind of fun. Money. He's shrewd as he can be, in such a way you'll never see. It's a terrible thing inside, when your natural high has died. The weaker turn to dope, aside their home. And I'm so glad I've got my own. So glad that I can see. My life's a natural high. The man can't put no thing on me. I'm so glad I've got my own. So glad that I can see. My life's a natural high. The man can't put no thing on me.
We have time for. Thank you for listening, and I'll play you out with some Anthony DiMello. See ya.
Do you think I'm going to help anybody? Oh, no, 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 no. I don't expect to be able to be of help to anyone. And I don't expect to do damage to anyone. If you're damaged, you did it. And if you're helped, you did it. You really did. We'll come to that later when I challenge your beliefs. You think people help you, they don't. You think people support you, they don't. I had an interesting example of a woman in a therapy group. She was a sister, she was a religious, and she said to me, you know, I don't feel supported by my superiors. Listen to this one now. And I said, what do you mean by that? And she said, well, look at my superior, the provincial superior. She never shows up at this novitiate where I am. She never shows up, never says a word of appreciation. So I said to her, all right, let's do this. I know your provincial superior. Let's do a little role playing. I know exactly what she thinks about you. How would that be? And she said, fine. All right. So I said, you know, Mary, acting the part of the provincial superior now, I said, you know, Mary, the reason why I don't come to that place you're in is that's the one place in the province that's trouble-free. No problems. I know you're in charge, so all is well. How do you feel now? And Mary said, I feel great. I said, all right, now, would you leave the room for a minute or two? This is part of the exercise. So she did. When she was away, I said to the group, I'm still Sister Mary Jane, the provincial, okay? Mary out there is the worst novice directress we've had in the whole history of the province. In fact, I don't go to the novitiate because I can't bear to see what she's up to. Oh, it's awful. And if I tell her the truth, she's only going to make those novices suffer all the more. We're getting somebody to take her place within a year or two. We're training someone. So in the meantime, I sort of say these nice words to her and keep her going. What do you think of that? They said, well, it's the only thing you can do. All right. Come on in, Mary. So Mary comes in. How do you feel? She says, I feel great. You feel supported by your superior? Yeah, I feel supported. Question. Who was supporting Mary? God, she says. Poor God, why did she drag him in now? Well, that's good, that's good, that's right. All right. So poor Mary, there it was. She thought she was being supported. You think you're in love with somebody? Well, I got news for you. You're never in love with anyone. You're only in love with your prejudiced and hopeful idea of that person. Want a minute to think about that? You're never in love with anyone. You're in love with your prejudiced idea of that person, with your hopeful idea of that person. Are you really in love with the person? Well, how come you fell out of love? Your idea changed, didn't it? How could you have let me down when I trusted you so much? Did you really trust me? You never trust anyone. Come off it. That's part of the brainwashing of your society and mine. We never trust anyone. You're only trusting your judgment about that person. So what are you complaining about? You don't like to say, my judgment was lousy. That's not very flattering to you, is it? So you prefer to say, how could you have let me down? So there it is. People don't really want to grow up. People don't really want to change. People don't really want to be happy. as someone has said so wisely, don't try to make them happy. You'll only get into trouble. Like the guy who gets into a bar, sits down, and he sees this fellow with a banana in his ear. A banana in his ear. And he says, I wonder if I should tell him that. And he thought, none of my business. And he thought, maybe I ought to tell him. So after he had a drink or two, he says, excuse me, you got a banana in your ear. So the guy says, what? He says, you got a banana in your ear. What was that? You got a banana in your ear. He said, talk louder, I got a banana in my ear. It's useless. Give up, give up, give up. Say your thing and get out of here. And if they profit, that's fine. And if they don't, too bad.